Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. Okay, we're a few weeks into 2025. If you thought that 2025 was going to be better than 2024, if it was going to be an easy year, I'm guessing that these first couple of weeks, as far as at least what we've seen in the news, has been a bit of a wake-up call. It has been a rough start to the year, and hopefully it doesn't signal, you know, a continuation of that, at least in as condensed as we've seen it from the, you know, wildfires in California and all the destruction that that's caused, which, by the way, I'm recording these episodes a couple of weeks in advance. So by the time this actually comes out, you know, right now I'm actually recording this January 9th. So this will probably come out towards the end of January. I don't really know the final outcome of that. Last I read, it was something like 9,000 structures burned, costing probably somewhere in the $50 to $57 billion range, which is just wild. But, you know, that's one of many things that has already taken place this year, and we will have to see where the year takes us. By the way, I guess I'll just throw this out right at the front of the episode. We do talk about those items in our bonus episodes on Patreon. I say we because I'm still thinking about the fact that it used to be Kellen and I. I talk about these things in the bonus episodes a couple weeks ago. By the time you hear this, so the bonus episode I did this week was on home insurance and how sketchy the home insurance industry is right now and how it likely won't last forever. If you want to join on those bonus episodes, just reach out, find me on Patreon. All right, this episode is just to sort of continue with this series of questions that I often get asked, that we often hear in sort of the Collapse sphere. If you ever talk to anybody about this idea that you feel like society is inevitably going to collapse at some point, people say all sorts of things and have all sorts of rebuttals. And this is one of the ones that I think is probably the most common. Now, before I really dive in and talk about why I don't think technology will save us, I want to mention a couple things. So it is important to question your ideas or your beliefs. It's a good thing to ask questions, and it's a good thing for other people to ask questions, as long as it's being done in good faith, right? If you were to talk to somebody about this question, or if you have this question yourself, as long as we're genuinely trying to learn, I think that this is a completely valid question. And it's one that I force myself to confront. I ask myself this question genuinely as I find new technologies come out, right? We'll get to the reason why I do not believe that technology will save us. But that said, we don't want to fall into confirmation bias, into echo chambers. We're not a cult, right? You don't want your beliefs to become cultish beliefs, where if somebody asks you a question, you get hyper defensive, or you know, you think, oh, this person's so stupid because they're asking me this question or they're rebuttaling me with this response. It's valid. It's valid to want to understand or to want to kick back against the idea of societal collapse with the idea that we're continually progressing and that there are things that are going to save us, especially because we hear this all the time. Technological advancements are in the news. It's, you know, it's always being projected as this amazing utopia future type thing. But I just wanted to clarify that and say that I always welcome questions. I hope that one day I will address this question. I will ask myself the question and be proven wrong, or prove myself wrong, or someone else will prove me wrong. I never want to come across as like I know everything, and I don't think any of us who are collapse aware should try and come across that way. I hope to the high heavens that one day a technology maybe does come out that defies the things we're about to talk about, that's completely outside the boundaries of normal technological restraints, and it finds a way to prevent collapse. But alas, let's talk about why I don't think that's the case. So first of all, there's lots of different technological, quote, solutions that are being presented to us all the time, right? I've listed a few out here. If you're on YouTube watching this, you can see this list. I'll read them off. New forms of energy. That's probably one of the biggest ones, right? And we're always trying to come out with new energy types that are more efficient. So renewables, solar, wind, hydro, etc. Nuclear fusion is always a decade away, as they say. Battery technology. Climate band-aids, so things like geoengineering and carbon capture are touted as the solution to our climate change issues. Artificial intelligence, AGI and ASI, the automation making everything more efficient. Biotechnology, so we've got things like CRISPR gene editing, longevity, this idea of lab-grown meat or food. Water management, so desalination plants, cloud seeding, sustainable transportation, electric vehicles, self-driving vehicles, high-speed rail. Space technologies, so the idea of colonization or this mission to Mars that you hear people like Elon Musk tout. Asteroid mining for precious metals. Material innovations, so things like nanotechnology or graphene. So there's all sorts, right? This is just a small list compared to all of the different categories and types of technological advancements that we are constantly seeing being worked on right now. And, you know, talking about cults, there is definitely a cultish mindset among some technology, you know, tech bros, crypto bros, like people who might follow someone like Elon Musk and be like, this is the greatest guy ever. He is just the future and he's leading us to all these great things, and all it takes is money and ideas and innovation and the world will be saved. And this is not to take a dump on people who have optimistic thoughts about the future or who want to see us succeed. I want to see us succeed. On that note, I like technology. I am not anti-technology. As a matter of fact, I find myself, like, if I was not collapse aware, I don't think I would be like a tech bro, but it just fascinates me learning about it and watching it. I love the idea of, you know, I read sci-fi, and I love this idea of a future that's filled with technological greatness. I look back and, you know, collapse notwithstanding, and the damage that's been done to the earth notwithstanding, and everything collapse related, if that wasn't there, you would look back and you would say, wow, we have done some amazing things, from curing diseases to, you know, extending the lifespan to increasing the comfort, the quality of life that we enjoy, the variety of foods and the ability to travel and communicate and do all the things that we do. It really is incredible. Humans are very resourceful and innovative. That said, we don't live in a fantasy land where those things don't have consequences. They've had great consequences. They are the reason that we will collapse. The technological advancements that we have come up with to this point have created a number of people on this planet that is not sustainable, and continuing to both do damage to the environment, to consume resources. Our biodiversity and ecosystems are being destroyed because of the amount of people that we have, which is due to technology. So why isn't technology the answer in the future? Yes, we can probably admit that technology has caused the current problem, but can we just technology our way out of it? So there's a few reasons for this. I've listed two main ideas here, and then the final one and sort of the crux of it all I will mention in the next slide. The first is diminishing returns on technological advancements. Joseph Tainter, who is a researcher at Utah State University, has written a book on this, and he's done lots of lectures on this. We interviewed him, Kellen and I did, once upon a time on this topic. And it's this idea that over time there has been a diminishing returns on technological advancement. So 200 years ago, 100 years ago, whatever, it was the discoveries were, they came much easier, right? A lone wolf sitting in his basement could come up with the light bulb, you know, or whatever. Learning about or discovering the laws of physics and those types of things did not require as much energy, capital, or resources as it does today to maybe come up with a technology that's much simpler, right? A much more marginal improvement. You look at the innovators of today and what it takes to come up with, to succeed in creating a new innovation or a new technology. And now it's teams of hundreds of researchers. You've got to have billions of dollars, massive amounts of resources, buildings, infrastructure, to, you know, testing, all of this different stuff to come up with new technologies. That slows down our ability to advance. Now, I'm not saying that new advancements don't come or won't come, because they are coming. We are seeing that technological advancement does still happen. It's just that the amount of resources required to reach those has increased. And that has a cost. That has a cost to the environment. It has a cost to our economies and all of that. The second here is just there's natural consequences to technological advancement. And these are the consequences that we've seen up to this point in technology. Due to the steam engine, due to agriculture, due to the use of fossil fuels, and even the advancements that have come since then in energy, we are where we're at today, even having this conversation. Those things did improve lifestyles. Those things did have so many pros, right? But the cons are that society will collapse. And, you know, when I did the episode on why is collapse inevitable, we went through all those reasons why. But really, that started with and is accelerated by the technological advancements and the damage that they do. And, you know, the end result, which is more people to do more damage to the planet. So these are two of sort of the main issues with technology. In the future, more technology could happen, will happen, but those items will have apparent and immediate effects on the environment. However, the last point I want to make here is that some people will say, well, okay, well, technology, we're going to come up with technologies that just make things more efficient, right? Yes, right now, perhaps, you know, we use so much energy, and that energy is through fossil fuels and maybe even renewables. They still have their environmental impact, solar panels, you know, that you have to dispose of, and the creation of those use fossil fuels and precious metals and all of that. But in the future, we're, you know, nuclear fusion is going to happen. And when it does, like, all of that's going to go away and we have nearly unlimited energy. All right. So that's where the Jevons paradox comes in. Whenever we talk about a technology that claims to be more efficient, we have to take into account the Jevons paradox. So the more efficient something becomes, the more widely it gets adopted, which results in a net increase in overall energy consumption, raw material use, pollution, population, etc. So the name of the Jevons paradox comes from a gentleman by the name of Jevons a couple hundred years ago, who noticed this phenomenon with the steam engine and with a couple other innovations. A technology comes out and they say, this decreases, or this is more efficient, so therefore it decreases the amount of energy required, whether it be energy or it could be a natural resource or whatever it is. We get more output with less input. So this is a great technological advancement. And because of that, it can cause the cost of something to decrease. It also has a psychological effect in which more people think that they can use it or should use it because it is more energy efficient or more resource efficient. But in the end, the fact that it became more efficient meant more people used it, and the net amount of energy or the net amount of raw material used or the net amount of pollution or whatever it is ends up increasing. So it's important to see the distinction between the a type of technology that would be affected by the Jevons paradox and one that might just be affected by the natural consequences of a technology. So a couple of examples. When you think of AI and what we see today with ChatGPT, ChatGPT is not really one that I would apply the Jevons paradox to, because it simply just has consequences to its use. It is not, no one's claiming that ChatGPT is more efficient than a Google search, right? Nobody is saying that we're going to expend less energy by using it. They are touting the pros of it, right? Saying, hey, look, ChatGPT, you can do a search there and learn the way that you want to learn. It can respond to the question that you're specifically asking when you ask it. You can't do that with a Google search. And a million other things they're saying that ChatGPT can do for you, right? No one's claiming that that's going to use less energy than a Google search. It's I would say a widely known fact that it uses a lot more energy than Google. I believe it's 10 times the amount each ChatGPT query than a Google question or a Google search. So as it stands right now, it's just, hey, here's a new technology. It's really cool. It does this really cool thing. Check it out. And as it gets more widely used, it's just a known fact that it's going to consume more energy than Google searches will. If we were to replace all Google searches, if Google went away and we just replaced it with ChatGPT, the amount of energy expended and therefore resources and pollution and everything that comes from that would be approximately 10 times higher. So that's just a natural consequence of a new technology, and it's something that we're seeing happen all the time. An example of Jevons paradox, I just brought up this idea of nuclear fusion, right? This is something that you hear, so much of our issues, climate change is caused by fossil fuels, and renewables have all these issues because even if they are more efficient, they can be very expensive. They also still require energy input and output, and they only work certain times of the day and all these other questions. And so this holy grail, this idea that if we can just nail nuclear fusion, then it'll fix everything. And look, one day I think it may happen, right? One day we could achieve nuclear fusion, and maybe even one day it could become commercially viable, it could become widely usable. And there is a very real possibility that if it did, it could eliminate most of our uses of fossil fuels and even of renewable energy as we use it right now. It would require a huge adjustment to infrastructure and a bunch of other stuff that would require a lot of upfront energy costs. But the net immediate, just looking at the energy use numbers at our current population size and all of that, would greatly benefit from nuclear fusion. But what we're not necessarily thinking of is that the use of nuclear fusion would greatly expand our ability to consume energy, right? If suddenly energy really was seemingly unlimited, our population would go from 8 billion on Earth to 10 billion, to 15 billion, to 20 billion, if it really did do something like allow us to colonize other planets, if you really wanted to go out there with the technology, nuclear fusion could allow for the use of energy to just an absolutely unbelievable degree. And it would be, again, energy that would be seemingly produced from nothing and have no immediate consequences. But a population of 20 billion or 15 billion or 12 billion or 10 billion on Earth is going to lead to other consequences, right? A population of that size would decimate Earth's resources in other ways. Growing that amount of food, the space to do it, the ecosystems which would disrupt for us to have to use that much space to house that many people, to build the roads for the transportation, right? To build the supply chains and all of the stuff that it would require, consumption would increase exponentially. We're already on a hockey stick, but with something like nuclear fusion, the amount of people on Earth and the amount of things that they would consume that goes beyond energy would skyrocket. And the net effect on Earth would inevitably be negative. Now, you might say, well, what if we just used nuclear fusion, if we had that technological advancement, and we put safeguards in place, right? What if we just required that the population stay the same or that it went down? What if we required blah, 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 so on and so forth? Those are fun ideas. They're not fun ideas, actually. They're completely, like, totalitarianistic. It would require just the worst dictatorship to actually put into effect something like that. Because people have free will, because we live in a capitalistic society, like, it would take some just absolutely wild changes to make that happen. And it would take away people's agency to make that happen. So, yeah, but, like, this is a big example, right? Nuclear fusion and all of that. But it happens with every single technology that we speak about that touts or that claims to increase efficiency. On the opposite end of the spectrum, right, with a really small scale example, the Jevons paradox, you might say, look, I am trying to be conscious of the environment. So right now I'm driving this gas vehicle and I'm really going to try to drive as little as possible in order to not pollute, right? I don't want to emit CO2 and all of that. And so you do, you're really careful and you limit the amount that you drive and you're sort of conscious about that. And then let's say you save up your money, you get a bonus at work and you purchase an electric vehicle. And so now you think, wow, like I've got this electric vehicle. I'm charging it like 80%, you know, at home on renewable energy with solar. And so what a great thing this is. I can drive now. Like suddenly I can drive wherever I want guilt-free. I'm going to take a cross-country vacation, right? Or I'm going to just go like cruise the town all the time or whatever. And in the end, that 80% renewable, hey, that's great. But that 20% that's not renewable, if you're driving five times as much, if you're taking trips across the country, maybe you're not considering the costs of the environmental cost of the lithium battery or the fact that all that driving is putting more rubber out into the environment because of the tires, and you're going through tires faster, and the maintenance on the vehicle, you're having to do more maintenance. So, you know, you've got a higher net effect of the parts being replaced, and all of that eventually leads to a net increase in the amount. And you may never realize it. You may not know that it's happening at all. You are driving guilt-free because there's no tailpipe emissions, right? But in the end, the net effects of that increase in efficiency is actually an increase in consumption. All right. These are the reasons why I don't think technology will save us. In the end, even the best of technologies will simply increase the number of people that are on Earth. And the number of people that are on Earth greatly increases the likelihood or the severity of collapse when it does happen. I'm interested to hear your thoughts. If you're familiar with the Jevons paradox and you don't agree with it, leave a comment. Let me know why. Let me know some areas in which you think technology will help us in the future. And we'll do another episode next week. Thank you. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.